morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
Where's Senator
Another
Daley?
Ted is not here.
Where is he?
That's right. Cheerleader. Where is he?
Wearing him out. Call to order the Senate Jobs and Economic Growth Committee. Members, we have four bills in front of us today. Before we bring on Senator Thompson, I'll also note we are waiting. Members, we are waiting on the House to convene again the conference committee for the budget bill that came out of here. And as you might recall, those of you on the conference committee and others who have heard it, Representative Gunther, the chair from the House side, had some health issues. Not quite as bad as Senator Tomasoni, but I know he was hospitalized. Tomasoni's got endurance, though, and he comes back quickly. So we're hoping Representative Gunther is at least as healthy, and that we'll have a conference committee scheduled as soon as possible. So, members, we have Senate File 1280 before the committee. Senator Thompson, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, thank you. And members, it's a pleasure to be here. And I think we will start out. I have an author's amendment, the A1 delete all amendment that I believe is in the packets of the members. At least I assume that it is. So I would ask Mr. Chairman.
Handed
somebody...
out, Senator Thompson. Hang on. Give him about 30 seconds.
All right. Sounds good.
And I'll ask you to speak to it. And I will note, members, that sometimes this issue get some folks involve some conflict, and I am told that there is peace in the valley on this measure, on this amendment, on this bill. So I appreciate the work done by Senator Thompson. Senator Thompson, to the A1.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, and members. Yes, Senator Michelle is exactly right. We all know that occasionally these kinds of issues can be somewhat divisive. In this particular instance, that is not the case. In fact, the Minnesota Restaurant Association has been working with Unite Here, which is the union that represents hotels, restaurants, and the catering employees, in an attempt to clarify Minnesota Statute 177.24, which deals with the issue of sharing of gratuities / tips. And the Delete All Amendment does essentially three things in clarifying the law. Number one, on the request of the employee, it safeguards tips to be shared among employees and provides for distribution of the tips, provides for the amount received as required by tax purposes so that there's proper reporting, that sort of thing, and that a copy of the statute is posted at the place of business for the information of the employee. So basically, what we're talking about is a situation where we want the employer to be able to work with the employees to distribute gratuities, distribute tips in a way that all of them agree, in a way that complies with the tax law. And so this is simply a clarification of that statute. And I will let Tony introduce himself and speak to the specifics of the bill. And, of course, be glad to answer any questions that the members have.
Thank you, Senator Thompson. I'll ask Senator Lilly will offer the A1 to put Senate File 1280 in the position that the author wants. Members, we have the A1 in front of us. All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. The motion is adopted. So we have the A1 amendment to Senate File 1280. Mr. Quillis, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Tony Quillis. I sit before you today representing the Minnesota Restaurant Association. Todd Hill and I represent them up here at the state capitol. There's not much more I can add to what Senator Thompson has briefed you on. He is correct that this came upon him upon request of the Minnesota Restaurant Association for some clarification on some tip pooling that we had going on. And if you'll notice on 1.12, it just allows employers that they may, upon request of employees, hold the envelope, if you will, report for required tax purposes, and then post a copy of this statute up in their offices on the billboard. And as Senator Thompson pointed out, we did work with Unite Here and Mr. Lunenburg and to come up with this language, and appreciate his time and efforts to come up with us to reach this language.
Thank you, Mr. Quillis. Can I just ask then, is there anyone else in the audience at the hearing this morning that would like to testify for or against NFL 1280? I think that's a pretty loud statement that there is peace in the valley or apathy in the valley. Senator Tomasoni.
So, Senator Thompson, is this your labor bill for the year?
Mr. Chairman, can you exercise the Fifth Amendment right in a committee? I don't know.
Senator Thompson, I know you have another one or two labor bills you can work on, Senator Tomasoni. Senator Kelash.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Mr. Qualls, could you just explain why the A1 has eliminated the lines 115 to 118 in the original amendment? All the information about kind of not allowing the employee to coerce employees to share them. I'm not exactly sure why that. What's the reason for the change, I guess, is what I'm looking at. Or maybe I'm missing something here in the transcript.
Mr. Chairman, I apologize, Senator Kelash. I don't have the original language in front of me, but if you could repeat on. I'm sorry.
Lines 115.
Starting on 1.15?
Yes.
That was some language that we had started with.
Mr. Quillis or Senator Thompson, do you need a copy of the original
language? No, I've got it. I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. I actually have it in front
of
me.
Mr. Quillis.
I wish I could further elaborate on that with you, Senator Kelash, but where we started with, that was some of the recommendations. I'm sorry. Mr. Chairman,
Mr.
I would like to turn it over to the executive director of the Minnesota Restaurant Association and my boss, who has now attended the meeting and will be able to further elaborate, Senator
Kelash. Mr. McElroy, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman and members, for the record, my name is Dan McElroy. I'm executive vice president of the Minnesota Restaurant Association. And the reason the language changed is that in working with the union, they wanted it to continue to clearly say that the agreement to share gratuities must be made by the employees, free of any employer participation. That went back in, and then we added, except that an employer may. And so this was a negotiation. The original language took out free from employer participation, and that was important to our friends in labor.
Thank you, Mr. McElroy. It's good to have you backing up Mr. Quillis. Thank you, Senator Kelash. Any more discussion members? Senator Lilly.
Mr. Chair, Senator Thompson. So run us through how this works. So I am an employee in a restaurant, a server in a restaurant, and there are 20 other servers. How does this pooling work should they choose to do this?
Well, I'm not sure I'm the best one to address that. Mr. McElroy, correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is that sometimes it's not entirely clear to whom a specific gratuity is given, depending upon the type of business, or maybe they work hours such that it makes more sense to kind of average tips over a period of time. So if the employees choose to do this and want to do this, this simply provides that the gratuities could be spread more equitably among the servers based upon kind of the way the business operates. Mr. McElroy, is that accurate? Mr.
McElroy. Yes, and it would be different in different establishments. Some fine dining establishments serve in teams where a waiter, a busboy, and a beverage runner would work together, and they would have an agreement, probably informal, probably traditional. This doesn't change that, but does allow them, if they wish, to ask the management to safeguard tips and to do the required tax reporting.
Thank you again, Mr. McElroy. All set. Senator Lilly, did you ever wait on tables?
My family members have. I don't have the people skills.
We've noticed that.
Mr. Chairman, I never waited on tables, but I did flip burgers at McDonald's.
Nice.
So.
Nice. One of my first jobs was Burger King. So, members, thank you. And thank you, Senator Thompson. Then. Senator Lilly will move that we pass Senate File 1280, recommended for passage, and goes to the floor.
As amended.
As amended. Thank you, Senator Kelash. Senate File 1280 as amended. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Bill is passed as amended. Thank you very much, Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Next up, we have Senator Ingebrigtsen. Members, let's really work this one over. Well, Senator Ingebrigtsen, the last time you were with the Jobs and Economic Growth Committee was up north. So it's
That's
good.
Right.
It's good
That's
to see
right.
you again. Can you tell us a little bit about Senate File 411?
Certainly will. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senate 411 is a, it's obviously a work in progress, like you've never heard that before from somebody sitting in this chair. But the background is since I came here 4.5 years ago, coming from the resort area of Minnesota, or at least one of the resort areas of Minnesota, it's always been of interest to me to help the folks out that are still providing one of the traditions that Minnesota has so enjoyed over the many years. And anytime I can do that, help them with some legislation that makes sense, I'm willing to do that. You should also know that, and why I feel that way is because believe it or not, in the 60s and 70s, there were 3,600 resorts in the state of Minnesota, and we're sitting right now in Minnesota with 900 resorts. So that's quite a difference. Well, there's a lot of various reasons why that's happened. Of course, the property's become so expensive and so valuable that it's probably somewhat cost prohibitive in some areas to continue. But nevertheless, it is a tradition that we'd like to see, and anytime we can help them out, we will do that. This is a licensing or an operator licensing bill for plumbing. Most of your resort owners, of course, are handymen and women that work on their properties on a yearly basis and know how to close them down and know how to open them up in the spring, and we want to be able to allow them to do that in a cost-effective way that isn't going to the expenses of running a resort certainly are pretty high, and one of the things we feel that the resort owner, if they're even thinking about going into it or have been into it for a long time, certainly know how to blow out their water systems and how to connect a pipe here and there, and then sometimes these things are loose at best because they're not probably buried under the ground like they normally are because they aren't open during the winter. So this bill actually deals with the owner of the resort in Minnesota to be able to purchase or obtain some kind of a permit or a license to be able to do their own work. And I think with that, I'll turn it over to the guy sitting to the right of me here who's been working with me with resorts since I came here, and he can better explain the bill.
Thank you, Senator Ingebrigtsen. Before you turn it over, members, you have the A1, which has been passed out in front of you. Why don't we take action on the A1 now, and then we can hear some more testimony from Mr. Carlson and perhaps others. So Senator Miller offers the A1.
Excuse me.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
If we could ask you to, before that's adopted, to delete sections 1 and 6 of that amendment.
Well, why don't we go to Mr. Carlson then, and then you can, in your presentation, talk to the pieces of the A1 that aren't quite settled yet. Thanks for stopping us. Mr. Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Joel Carlson. I own a legal research and government affairs business in St. Paul, and I represent the Congress of Minnesota Resorts, which is a trade association of family-owned resort properties in Minnesota, and I've had the pleasure of representing them since 1996. And right about the time Senator Ingebrigtsen came to the Capitol, legislation was passed that required people doing work on public accommodations to obtain a plumbing or to that work to be done by a licensed plumber. At that time, the legislature adopted a provision for people to obtain a restricted plumber's license, and the window to do that was open for about 6 months. There was a lot of confusion whether or not this applied to people that were working in resorts, were not engaged in the business of plumbing, and there was a lot of confusion. Some resorters did apply and get a restricted plumber's license. Others did not. We found out that the restricted plumber license did apply to resorts through working with the Department of Labor and Industry. And so the legislature subsequently opened up the window again for people to apply for and get restricted plumber's licenses so that resorters, principally resorters, would be able to do work on their own property. We found out that once that window closed, that there are still a number of people who fall outside that window, and there's confusion as to whether or not they can operate on their own property to do their maintenance of their plumbing installations. And so we have worked with, and I'd like to applaud the Department of Labor and Industry to come forward with legislation that, that develops a maintenance plumber's license. That's what is contained in the A1 amendment. And there are a number of cross-references in the amendment, which through further discussion we found out we don't need to do as it relates to an apprentice program or others, and that would be Section 1 and Section 6 of the amendment before you, and no one has any objection to deleting those two sections. But what this language does is it develops a maintenance plumber's license specifically for resort owners and their employees, where they can obtain a license from the department to do work only on their property. They would apply for and make application for the license, and it would be good for a two-year period. I believe there's a $40 fee every 2 years for obtaining that license so the department can administer the program. But we think that this more accurately reflects for those resorters that that need to get licensed to do plumbing on their property, what is actually going on, and restricts it only to work on their property class 1C or 4C resorts. And so with that, Mr. Chairman, that's the 411 on Senate File 411.
Nice,
and
nice.
Happy to answer questions, but this is really, you know, it impacts your resort and your cost of doing business if you have to retain a licensed plumber to come in and change a wax ring or to fix a leaky faucet. It's an issue for a person who would purchase a resort because the current person might have a restricted license, but the window's closed for that, so going forward they would have to have a licensed plumber. This just makes it easier for resorts to operate, to stay in business, and to sell their business as a going concern without this additional cost or burden. And we'd appreciate your support and be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. I appreciate your use of the teenage terminology and vernacular 411, but you know you've got about the most unhip legislative author next to you there, so you might have,
I'm hip.
You might have lapped him.
Far, far out. How's that? Metzen understands that one.
I'm holding up to get that one.
Far out, yeah.
Oh, very good. Is there anyone else, before we take action on the amendment, which is delete all, is there anyone else in the audience who wants to testify today on Senate File 411? Okay, then, members, we can take this in one motion. So Senator Miller will move the A1, and incorporating within that motion is deleting Sections 1 and 6 in the A1, which will put it into the form that was presented today by Senator Ingebrigtsen and Mr. Carlson. Does everyone understand the motion? Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Ooh, I went early. All opposed, say nay. Motion is adopted. So we have the Senate File 411 now before us, as amended with the A1. Senator Ingebrigtsen, I understand this has to go to Finance. So, Senator Metzen,
I would like to move the bill to Finance.
Senator Metzen, it's good to have you in here again.
It's good to be here.
So Senator Metzen moves that Senate File 411 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to the Finance Committee. Senator DeCryf.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question here that I for some clarification.
Great. Senator DeCryf.
Senator Ingebrigtsen, on page 5 of your amendment, 5.25, it talks about a plumber exam. And something about 4 years of practical experience. Is there going to be, you know, this person that does this work, are they going to have to have some practical experience and 4 years of practical experience to take an exam to get this license?
So, Mr. Carlson, to that question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senators. This is language that is consistent right now with the restricted plumber's license that resorters must obtain. And we have been working with the department and plumbing contractors to make certain that those requirements are accurate and achievable by resorters. And you'll note on page 6 of the bill, on 6.6 through 6.10, that our preference and what we are envisioning here is that working with the plumbing board, they would adopt rules to, regarding the fitness of an applicant. But until that time, the commissioner would just administer an application to a resorter like the restricted license. So that really wouldn't change. We don't believe that is a change in practice. Even though we maybe would want to make a change in practice, this is not a change in what is currently going on with the restricted license that many resorters have obtained and are operating under. It's not a bar that we can't meet.
Senator DeCryf, is that satisfactory?
Yeah.
Okay. Senator Tomasoni.
Chairman, Joel, is line 4.5, is that the reference to resorts?
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chair and members, it is. On 4.5, this maintenance plumbing license only applies to someone who is doing this work, who is an owner or employee under property tax classification class 1C or 4C, and that is, those are only resort properties in the definition that we have. So, yes.
All right, members. Then Senator Metzen renews his motion on Senate File 411. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed nay. Motion is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank
members.
You, Senator Farout.
Thank you. And to show you really how hip I really am, when I go to the Ag Committee, now it'll be Farm Out. There.
Oh, yeah, my gosh. So. I'm so happy. Oh. Senator Nelson. Members, we have Senate File 1204 with Senator Nelson. And is there an amendment?
Is it a deleto?
Okay, so we're handing out some language at the moment. Okay, so Senator Nelson to Senate File 1204.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I would like to move Senate File 1204, and I thank you for the opportunity to present this to you. As you see, we have an A1 amendment that I would like to move first so that the bill can be presented in its correct form. So I'd like to move the A1.
Senator Nelson moves the A1 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So moved.
Thank you,
Senator
Mr. Chair.
Nelson.
I'd also like to thank the co-sponsors on this bill, Senator Torres Ray and Senator Peterson, who are also members of this committee. Senate File 1204 is a proposal regarding the composition of the Governor's Workforce Development Council. Now, the A1 amendment before you basically changes what was our original thought, was to add a member, but to not add a voting member, make that more of an advisory member. So that's the genesis of the amendment before you. We think that, in this committee, we've often talked about jobs. Amazingly enough, in the jobs committee, we're focused on jobs. And one of the things that we want to do is not only make Minnesota have a more friendly job climate, but we also want to help those who are seeking jobs best secure those jobs. And in these tight budget times, we expect that our public agencies will work together and to provide the best value to the public. This is one small way we think that we can encourage that. We know that people that are looking for jobs, oftentimes they come to the public libraries. They get help putting together their resumes, filling out online job applications, research. And so while they're there, we think it would be helpful to have the experience of the library a council on the governor's Workforce Development Council as well. Now, some agencies are already working closely together, and some are not. So this is just an effort to encourage that. We think that having a public library representative to advise, remember, advise, not be a member, but advise the governor's Workforce Development Council would be a good step toward establishing a closer working relationship between libraries and workforce centers across the state. We expect the result will be a better service to job seekers and better value for taxpayers. With that, I would like to turn it over to Kit Hadley, who is the director of the St. Paul Public Library, to speak a little bit about this.
Ms. Hadley, please introduce yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Kit Hadley. I'm the director of the St. Paul Public Library. There are millions of visits to public libraries in Minnesota every year, from job seekers, people filing for unemployment, people learning to update their resume, learning basic computer skills, and preparing for interviews. Public libraries are among the most publicly, widely accessible public service in the state. They are a terrific complement to the workforce centers, but they are widely available in every county, either in mobile service or actual libraries. As compared to the nearly 50 workforce centers in the state, there are over 350 public libraries. And in the metropolitan area, they have eight times as many open hours per week, they have eight times the number, and they have over nine times as many public internet computers. People get help in libraries in person, online, and in classes. They get help from library staff. They get help from community organizations that deliver their service in libraries. It's a tremendous part of our infrastructure in the state to support job seekers, but they aren't represented on the Governor's Workforce Development Council as they should, and this bill would address that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions from members?
Yeah, Senator Metzen. Mr. Chairman. Senator Nelson, I think this is a great idea, but why would it the person only be an advisory position? I mean, if it makes sense and they show up at the meeting, it seems to me they ought to have a vote. Why advisory? Sometimes they sit there and kind of listen and get something in, but can't make motions, can't vote. And if it's a good idea, let's make them a regular member. So maybe you could tell me why we should not make them a full-fledged member of this committee.
Senator Nelson.
Well, thank you, Senator Metzen. That's exactly how the bill was in its original form. And what we found out was that caused a bit of a problem in that our Workforce Development our Governor's Workforce Development Council actually preceded the federal law that currently states that if we were to do anything now and change what was our grandfathered Governor's Workforce Development Council, we would suddenly be under all the new federal rules and regs. And so we would like to keep our grandfathered status. We think we can do things better in Minnesota than actually what the federal rules and regs are. We'd like to not change the Governor's Workforce Development Council in such a way that we would suddenly lose our grandfathered status. So by changing this to an advisory member, we will not lose our grandfathered status.
Mr. Chairman, if you're correct on that, that's fine. But I just think that, if that's the way it is, that's the way it is. But I still think they should be able to vote. But if it's not going to work, it's not going
to
work.
And to add to that, actually, we've worked this out with Deed for the very reason. Our original bill was exactly as you intended. Because of the federal rules and regs that have since been placed on Governor's Workforce Development centers, we don't want to lose our grandfathered status. So we hope they can make their wishes known, and their fellow members on the council will take heed.
Mm. Senator Howe.
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, I look at this. I got a couple questions. I'm just wondering how often the work council meets, and I'm just wondering, is anybody precluded to these open meetings and people can come? Because I'm just looking at the membership here, and the size of this council is about half the size of the Senate. You know, it looks like it kind of has, you know, if we can't make any changes, if anything, I would think we'd want to reduce and say that people can participate, but you've got six people from this and six people from that, and it looks like, you know, we're trying to get every single person at the table. without maybe just having a representative there. And I'm just wondering, is this a kind of a, wouldn't anybody who wants to come and maybe speak or participate can at least come and, you know, if they're advisory, come and actually speak to an issue or listen? Because I served on the Clean Water Council, and there was a lot of people that weren't part of the commission that were there all the time and actually gave input but weren't codified into it. So I'm just wondering about how often they meet and how this process looks. It looks like a pretty large council.
Senator Nelson, I think there were 14 questions buried within that, but you can choose to address any of them. Senator Nelson.
Thank you very much. Yes, there are a number of questions there, Senator Howe. That actually goes a little bit beyond the scope of this bill as far as the total makeup of the Governor's Workforce Development Council. I can tell you that they are in favor of this change, and there may be someone here from the council who can tell you how often they meet. I think it might be quarterly, but I'm not sure. Thank you. Now, I can tell you that I've served on a number of councils myself, and there are always advisors, whether it be the Capital Area Architectural Planning Board, and those advisors have a seat at the table, I think, for a very good reason, because they bring some needed expertise that we want at the table and that we want at every discussion. And so I think there's an added value in having advisors in particular areas of need and expertise be added to a council rather than testifiers who may come for a particular issue, just like we have advisors at our table today.
Senator Kielash.
Mr. Chair, Senator Howe, one of the things that the big number includes is that there are different labor markets throughout and business markets throughout the state that address different things. Having a large number means that we can bring people in from each area of expertise, whether it be labor or business, that represents those areas of the state. It makes for the Governor's Workforce Council oversees all the area workforce councils. So I think that's the big reason for the large number, to make sure all the input is going in. Governor's Workforce Council is looking at a statewide input from all regions of the state. So it actually works quite well.
Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, to Senator Metzen's point, it looks to me like the original bill, the member was non-voting anyway, but was just a member of the council without a vote. Is that your understanding, Ms. Hadley? Senator Nelson, who knows the answer to that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Tomasoni, yes, that was the language, and the concern was that even with that language, it would trigger the this provision, which would have meant that Minnesota would have had to adopt the federal rules with respect to the membership of the Workforce Development Council. So this was the language that was agreed on that would not trigger that action.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Tomasoni.
Ms. Hadley, do you see any difference between advisor to the council as opposed to a non-voting advisory member of the council? Do you see any difference in the role?
Mr. Chair and Senator Tomasoni, yes, I think, we ran this by the Department of Labor specifically to ask them, and we think that this language does make a difference because it doesn't use the word member, if I have it correct.
I understand that, but I'm just talking about the person's role. If you're a non-voting advisory member of the council or you're an advisor to the council, the role doesn't appear to be any different.
Mr. Chair and Senator Thomas, I agree. And it will serve the purpose of, as a structural matter, getting public libraries at the table. They're an important part of the infrastructure in the state, and that was the purpose of this bill.
Do they get per diem? I have to answer that. That's okay.
Members, further discussion? Let me ask, is there anyone else in the audience who would like to testify on Senate File 1204? Very good. Then Senator DeCryf moves that Senate File 1204, as amended, be recommended to pass, and it's going to go to state government.
Did we amend it yet?
Okay.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion is adopted. Thank you, Senator Nelson. Next, we have Senator Peterson.
Can you amend it?
Senate File 1265. We've covered a lot of ground today, members. We've gone from tips in restaurants to plumbers. Now we're going to talk about baseball. Maybe. Yeah. Senator Peterson, Senate File 1265.
Thank you, Chair, Mr. Chair and members. I'd like to offer right away an author's amendment. It's the A3 amendment to Senate File 1265.
All right. Thank you, Senator Peterson. So everyone has the A3. Let's put it in the form. Let's put Senate File 1265 in the form that the author would wish. Senator Lilly offers Peterson offers the A3. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, nay. A3 is adopted. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This bill was brought to our office by the Major League Baseball Players Association and addresses an issue that became apparent in a recent court case. This bill provides for Minnesota's drug testing law to recognize the labor agreements specifically for professional athletes. This is important so that the professional athletes have the same requirements throughout the whole country. Regarding drug testing and as it has been agreed to their contract between their employer and themselves as an employee. The professional athletes have a very significant and robust drug testing requirement in their agreements as it is right now, and they happen to exceed the state requirements in certain circumstances. Currently, there's no known opposition to this bill, and it has been reviewed by the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, the AFL-CIO, as well as the Department of Labor and Industry, and, of course, the local major sports teams. Today, we have a guest in Mr. McGinnis, who is representing the Major League Baseball Players Association and is here to testify in support of this bill.
Hang on, Senator Thomson. Mr. McGinnis, welcome you to the committee, and please... What is going on with the Twins?
I can say with total sincerity, I am not competent to answer that question.
Senator Peterson, you got a winner here. Mr. McGinnis, to Senate File 1265, then.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Kevin McGinnis, and I'm here today representing the Major League Baseball Players Association in support of Senate File 1265. The bill simply clarifies, as Senator Peterson noted, that Minnesota state law cannot be used to impede, interrupt, or delay the operation of a drug testing program in professional sports. In 2008, two professional football players challenged application of their league's drug testing program under several provisions of Minnesota state law. Although both federal and state courts ultimately ruled against the players, some claim the decisions have raised some questions about drug testing in the state. And some members of Congress contend that the simple fact that a lawsuit was filed justifies Congress preempting all state drug testing laws that apply to professional athletes. S-1265 eliminates any possible confusion about Minnesota state law and the need for federal preemption. It makes clear that in Minnesota, the drug testing programs in all professional sports will continue without interruption, provided that, one, the program reflects an agreement between the sports league and its players, and if requested, both the sports league and the players have certified to the state that such an interpretation is necessary to ensure uniform application of the testing program throughout the country. I should note that the bill mirrors a prior clarification passed by this legislature. In Minnesota, there are strict limitations, statutory limitations, upon the use of random drug tests by employers. To ensure that this prohibition did not interfere with random drug testing of professional sports, the legislature also included specific language allowing random drug tests, provided that the players involved are covered by a collective bargaining agreement that permits such testing. Other states and local governments have similar specific language to protect drug testing programs in professional sports. Today, the drug testing program in Major League Baseball is fair, effective, and comprehensive. All players are tested repeatedly, both in season and off season, and those caught violating the rules are penalized. Senate File 1265 will ensure that our testing program and comparable programs in other professional sports will be able to continue to operate without interruption or uneven enforcement. Again, thank you for the opportunity to testify and for your willingness to consider this small but significant issue. I'd be happy to answer any questions you have about the Senate file as opposed to baseball.
I had Senator Tomasoni earlier. I don't know if you're still...
Well, I'm trying to figure out what's going on in this committee, Mr. Chairman. It seems like there's a paradigm shift or something. You got Peterson representing labor. You got Thompson representing...
You should
tipped
celebrate
tipped employees, I know. I'm just wondering what's going on. I'm trying to figure this all out. Maybe you guys are coming around.
Maybe they did something else to you when you were under.
Who knows? Who knows?
Let's see. I have.
I do want to ask one question, Mr. Chairman.
It
seems to me your witness said that this applies to baseball players only, but it says professional athletes here. Is this all sports?
Yes, sir. All sports.
All sports. Okay. And we're talking about the Vikings then, right?
Yes, you are.
Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. McGinnis, Senator Tomasoni's question is kind of half of my question. So as the legislation is drafted in a generic way, do we? I don't know what is required from one league to another in terms of drug testing, but do we assume that the other professional players' associations would be supportive of this legislation, football, hockey, basketball?
Yes, Senator, they are.
Mr. McGinnis, yes?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. Yes, Senator, they are.
And then, Mr. Chairman, Mr. McGinnis, I'm inferring that this is something that's going on around the country, that if you're going from state to state, at least for their major league teams, if states have adopted legislation in conflict with what's being done on a national contractual basis.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, Minnesota is actually has a very good, robust testing program, law, excuse me. It is, however, the only state where this issue has arisen. Other jurisdictions are sort of silent on this issue. Other jurisdictions, both state and local, have specific carve-outs for professional testing in Major League sports.
So, Mr. Chairman, just one other question that begs the question. So what brought this to your attention?
Well, Mr. Chairman, obviously the issue that came up was concern about the Williams case, the 2008 Williams case, and the fact that it's gone on for 3 years. I believe one of the plaintiffs has dropped out of the case. One is still pursuing it at some degree. But we wanted just to clarify and make it certain that we would not have the sort of interruption that you saw in football in the future. We would not have it in football, but more importantly, we would not have it in any of the other sports.
Okay. So, Mr. Chairman, my last comment, Mr. McGinnis, is just a parenthetical aside. That suggests, and of course, what all of you are doing is you're learning a lot about the Minnesota district then, if you're practicing professional sports law any place in the country, since we're kind of the venue.
Mr. McGinnis.
I've noticed, at least with regard to football, you certainly are.
Senator Cohen, I think there's some language here that talks about drug testing of the legislature.
Don't go there.
That was, Mr. Chairman, that was from the old days.
Senator DeCrafe.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess that kind of leads to one question I had early on, and I didn't know if Senator Tomasoni, when he got back, was subjected to any kind of drug testing before he could.
I have two little nuclear implants I didn't tell you guys about, but I don't know.
Do I have anyone else?
Hang on, Senator Howell. Anyone else in the audience who'd like to testify today on Senate File 1265? Okay, Senator Howell.
Mr. Chair, you know, I guess we're looking at this just one side. I think we're assuming that all professional sports have more stringent standards. And I guess my concern is if you're writing a law that says it will not be construed to interfere with the operation of drug and alcohol testing program, what if you have a major league or a professional sports system that has a less stringent standard than the state of Minnesota? And it appears to me that you're carving out an unintended exemption for someone here by not addressing whether it's more stringent or less stringent. And I'm just wondering if you could address that.
Mr. McGinnis?
You could read it that way, sir. The nature of drug testing in professional sports these days is such that they are always going to be far more restrictive and comprehensive than anything you would have under normal state law. You could conceivably create a scenario where you would have a sort of a conspiracy between both the league and the players to create such a scenario, but it is sort of highly doubtful given all that's been gone on with sports testing.
Senator Howe.
I'm just wondering why we wouldn't address that in this legislation, because you're not, you are, you're just viewing it from one side. You're not looking at the opposite argument, and I think you could have some unintended consequences if you don't address it.
Further discussion, members? Senator Peterson, that last particular issue offered by Senator Howe, is something you guys could work on as this bill advances? I see some nods behind Mr. McGinnis as well. Senator Howe raises a good point.
Happy to.
Sure, Mr. Chair and members. With that, I'd want to ask you to move Senate File 1265 to the floor as amended.
Very good. Senator Peterson moves Senate File 1265 to be recommended to pass as amended. We'll be going to the Senate floor. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed nay. Nay. The bill. The motion is adopted. Senate File 1265. Thank you, Senator Peterson. Members, we may or may not have another committee hearing tomorrow. At this point, we don't have business in front of the committee, but since it's policy deadline week, sometimes things move fast. Thanks for your work this morning. Committee's adjourned.